Good afternoon and welcome to our last and third weekend within our three-part series, Why Are We Here Now? And this weekend, Rabbi Amrui entitled, How Close Could We Get to the Light and Survive? This two-day event consisting of nine non-academic lectures investigates the fabrication of truth and endeavors to find out how art can establish new forms to speak about the complexity of history. In a conversation we had this summer touching the project's main concerns, Rabia suggested, I quote, finding particles of the so-called truths in the rubble of history, and especially in the region we are talking about, the southern and eastern Mediterranean, I see ourselves in the midst as part of the rubble. But instead of looking and being pushed away, as in Walter Benjamin's image about the angel looking at history as a heap of rubble, we are watching all the angels looking at us and moving further and further away. This stuck in my mind as it exemplifies our project. The question raised here is how to take responsibility for what has happened and how to form a practice that works against the well-ordered regimes of modern thought and historical writing, a practice that is poised to propose new frames of reference. The types of system that orient us and give us those frames of reference are articulated through narratives that allow us to perceive the world. Wherever something socially important is happening or being negotiated, stories and the narratives are involved are being told. Those stories are affected by the changes within the place and those who take control of it. Exactly in this interplay, I believe narratives start doing their job. Obviously, they're not innocent. They have the function within their social entities, and they are the privileged media for collective memory formation. The more social energy one narrative contains, the more it disconnects from the criteria of legitimated references. This means it shapes the knowledge and non-knowledge of societies similarly. Whether a narrative is reliable or unreliable does not matter, Rabia argued in the same conversation mentioned earlier. What matters is to understand what is behind this narrative and why this narrative is saying this or that and how. It is an attempt to listen to the others, even if they are on the other side of our beliefs, and to analyze what discourse is hidden behind the speeches and how we can place these versions of truth next to our own versions and see the social, political, and economic problems, conflicts, and tensions. With this approach, Rabia connects to the articulations by Adania Shibli and Mohamed Alatar from the previous two weekends, investigating key discourses that have underlined political, social, and cultural transformations over the past century in the southern and eastern Mediterranean. All three of them share a skepticism toward grand narratives such as progress and civilization. Instead, they propose to investigate details and seemingly marginal subjects. They search for what is left out and gaze at the traces of the nonlinear, the counterfactual, and the incomprehensible in an attempt to spur other forms of finding truth. This hall is dedicated to one of the great freedoms, the freedom of expression. Its form was inspired by an attempt to express that great purpose. In this sense, the form is a symbol, and I believe it is a good symbol. With these words, Hugh Stubbins, the architect of this building, inaugurated in September 1957 a gift of the United States government to the city of Berlin, a conference hall and a beacon of freedom. In keeping this pose for modernity, this venue embodies the secularization of thinking and corresponds to the United Nations' universalizing promise of a democratic, visionary concept for post-war societies. At the heart of the building is this space, the auditorium, a space equipped with a stage, speaker's desk, and tiered seatings for 1,200 visitors. The size of the room celebrates a sense of shared community, while its centering cone-like form allows for a central address directed to the audience. A design vocabulary is described in this space that testifies to openness and greatness. but which also constrains freedom through architectures that guide our focus toward a central authority. Similarly, notions of freedom, progress, and their claims for universality, that deemed the building blocks of Western concept formation, are contained and inscribed in this space, both in architecture and in aim. It is a place for the staged word. But given a stage, what chance do we have to reform this naturalized architecture? How is it that we can reform its locus of authority significantly through the structure of space itself? Rabih Amroei invited artists and writers to unpack history beyond its empty propagandistic and political takeover. Together, they will explore Lebanon's regional relationship to its past and present time. And as such, it is intertwined into our contemporary world situation. By using the term non-academic lecture for a format widely known as lecture performance, he highlights and questions the lecture's academic relationships in form and fabrication so as to implicitly question the authority granted to it. In this regard, it becomes a tool to question the authority of institutional and methodologically rigid structures. And in this regard, it becomes a space for the staged word. Before I pass over to Rabih, I want to express my thanks to Rabih for accepting our invitation in shaping a weekend for our project, 9 Academic Lectures, as a strategy of research to ask alternative questions, doubts, and thoughts from an artistic perspective. And together with my colleagues, with whom I had the pleasure to organize and produce the project within the last year, I would like to thank the writers and artists for your commitment in contributing to this weekend. Thank you very much.